What up, what up, what up? Back again for another great episode of the FTN Fantasy Show. And listen, stomachs are full. Thanksgiving is past us. We have some NFL football all day long yesterday. Okada joining me for the ride, man. Ooh. How has been your Thanksgiving, my guy?
Very solid. I work on Thanksgiving every year because shout out working for the NFL. But the good news is... Laquan, I don't know if you know or not, because your schedule is so strange with how early and stuff you work, but the Thanksgiving food at the NFL that they cater or make for us, very good.
Wow, I missed out on that.
Yeah, it's very good. So it's like nice home cooking for us that are working, and there's also holiday pay, so it's all around a great situation. And I do awesome. Friendsgivings other days.
Nice. Listen, I love all the Thanksgiving talk, the foods and everything. Like, mine's just real chilled and low key. Like, we ended the night playing Uno, me and the fam, and you know that get competitive at times. But I want to take a peek behind the curtain, man, because I'm looking at the doc, and we're gonna jump in into your need to know for week 13. Your number one is a little like wild to even read or hear you say before the show even started. But Okada, turkey is the word. Turkey.
Turkey.
Your thoughts.
Listen, Laquan, listen. There are some important things to know in the article this week. However, most of them are about, coincidentally, players that played yesterday. So we're gonna do a couple. But before we get there, we have a more important thing to know. And this is something that everybody needs to be... It's not even something everyone needs to know, Laquan. It's something that everybody knows, but not everybody is willing to accept and admit to themselves. And to quote the great Cam Ward with regard to turkey, if we keep it a buck, we ass. Because turkey is garbage. And I'm tired. I am tired of everybody pretending like it's not. Tell me, somebody explain to me this. Why do we spend the entire year, not eating turkey? Hot, at least hot, like oven or, you know, however you prepare your turkey. People eat deli meat turkey. Some people would even eat like turkey breast cold in a sandwich, which is insane. But we never make turkeys and eat them except on one day of the year that we think we have to because of tradition. You know why we don't do that the rest of the year, Laquan? Because it's garbage. It's
a dry
bird.
No, stop it. Stop right there. I have turkey on Christmas as well. But I will
That's
say
true.
This.
Some people do that.
I've had dry turkey. So I understand your stance of it. But it's my God. Dry. No, it's not. There's turkey that has juices in them. There's turkey that you can fry. There's turkey that is prepared and marinated properly, meaning that it just falls off the bone. Put it in a crock pot, for God's sakes, if you want a juicy turkey. I understand some people experiences. Okada, it is you and Michael Florio, our guys over there at the NFL Network. We got colleagues over there that say the same thing, that turkey is ass. I don't agree. I like it. I like a nice little turkey sandwich a couple days after Thanksgiving on two sliced bread. I am very
Is it cold? Man.
Yeah, it's cold. So
okay,
what?
See, this is what I'm saying. It's meant like it's okay in a sandwich cold for some reason. Maybe it's because you put enough mayonnaise on there. I don't know if you put mayonnaise on your turkey sandwich. No, that helps
moisturize.
You
put a little mustard, you put a little mayo, lettuce, like you
okay,
hook it
see,
up. Tomato.
But that's different because we do that all year. What we don't do all year is heat it up and eat it just by itself with a fork.
If I got some collard greens, some yams, some macaroni and cheese left over with some turkey, that is going down, my brother. I don't know what to tell you. I can't believe we're starting a pot off of like this with turkey being hated on. I cannot take the turkey shame right now, bro.
It's got to go. Ham? That's give me a insane. Give me a ham on Thanksgiving.
You know what? We are going to move on, folks, creature. Because that is so triggering. Ham is... I do not want to show it to a Friendsgiving, which I've had in the past, where there's no turkey. So it's like, what are we eating? Ham? No!
Yes! No!
My boy, I eat a ham and turkey sandwich. Like, I can make that at home. Or my wife makes ham in the freaking morning on the side of the eggs and... Like, bro, no, we're not eating this for turkey.
Hot ham.
Folks that are listening, I have no idea how to convince Okada that turkey could be prepared differently other than a dry turkey. Bro,
Listen, I have had it every way it can be had. And my dad is a professional chef. So I've had it well made. It doesn't matter. The juiciest you can get is still not as juicy as KFC chicken. Chicken is just a juicier bird. Let's switch to chickens.
Oh my God. Listen, we're not going to be changing the family traditions of decades of centuries of Thanksgiving and take the turkey completely out of the equation for ham or chicken. No. All right, man. Okada, our week 13 need to know. What is your number two? Because apparently that had to be number one, that turkey, if we're keeping in a buck.
It did. All right. Well, the bad news, Laquan, is we're not going to get any more positive through these other things to know, or really the rest of the show. We had all of our Thanksgiving thankfulness yesterday, and the rest of this is pretty tough. Here's number two. Justin Jefferson is cooked. Yeah. Now, he's cooked worse than the turkey, I'll say, even, which is saying something.
Oh, my God. It's going to be turkey now, shots all show.
When I say cooked, it's important to note, it's cooked for Justin Jefferson, which means week to week, he's still like a low-end wide receiver two that you're probably starting in most leagues. But just the way that I just said that sentence is the problem, because we're talking about, you know, many people would have arguably said the best wide receiver in the NFL right now or coming into this year, and certainly drafted to be one of the best in fantasy. And of course, the concept when we drafted him this high was his talent is too good for J.J. McCarthy to hurt him, really. And there was also the hamstring injury concern for Jefferson, but I think we're past that now. What we're not past is J.J. McCarthy sucking.
Yeah.
He is bad. And as a result, despite his talent, Justin Jefferson has gone 11 straight games this year without scoring 18 fantasy points in half PPR. And in the six games with J.J. McCarthy, because his best games came with Carson Wentz, he hasn't hit 14 fantasy points in half PPR. His only 200-yard games, it's bad. His only 200-yard games came with Carson Wentz, and he has scored just two touchdowns and only one in the last 11 weeks because his first one came in week one. He's still seeing a bunch of targets, so this is the reason that you realistically are going to continue starting him. But with McCarthy, he is averaging 9.5 half PPR fantasy points per game, Laquan. 9.5. That is less than Christian Watson in points per game, at least entering this week. And it's actually Christian Watson's averaging more than that now because he had a great game. Yeah. Stephon Diggs, Trey Tucker, Quentin Johnston.
Yikes.
These are guys averaging more points per game than Jefferson with McCarthy. You just simply cannot at all consider him a wide receiver one, and he's not even a guaranteed wide receiver two. If you happen to draft well or pick up some stars, there are leagues where I think Justin Jefferson could be benched.
Listen, I am all for the Justin Jefferson benching because Okada, of every single point that you've hit on. And it's kind of alarming to see this happening when we went into this season saying, hey, we won't make that mistake that we did last year, you know, where we were questioning Sam Darnold and saying that, you know, Justin Jefferson is QB proof. But this looks like a very big concern heading into 2026 drafts. And I don't think we need to start picking that apart and trying to iron that out and try to play the guessing game if, you know, J.J. McCarthy is going to be the guy. But overall, I think for the fantasy playoffs, like, you should be looking towards other options. You should be having plan Bs. You should be looking at Justin Jefferson as a wide receiver two at best. Like, you trying to put and frame yourself and paint that pretty picture. Like, no, man, volume is king, man. It's Justin Jefferson, the talent. No, my brother. We are seeing the results and a little bit deeper. And, like, you spoke on recently of, like, 9.5 fantasy points per game with Justin Jefferson. You named guys like Trey Tucker, Quentin Johnston. Like, hold up, pause. These are wide receiver threes, flexes at best, and they've been performing and trending up. So if these guys happen to be living somewhere on the waiver wire for whatever reason, because Last three games, Mac Hollins has more fantasy points than Justin Jefferson. Jerry Jeudy has more fantasy points than Justin Jefferson. In three games and only one start, John Mechie has more fantasy points than Justin Jefferson. That is what we're dealing with, folks. And I don't see it getting any better this week against the Seahawks. Max Brosmer, like, bruh, zero career starts. This is a very young quarterback, wet behind the ears. Could be equal, same, but different, but still the same with J.J. McCarthy. Okada, a lot of fantasy managers have been victims of Mr. David Montgomery. Please tell me you got something good.
I don't got something good. I've got another something bad. I don't know how this happened. This all lined up this way, but it is such is life right now. And listen, if you watched football yesterday and you watched David Montgomery and the Lions, you watched them lose to the Packers, you might think maybe David Montgomery is okay. Realistically, you probably think that more if you just looked in your fantasy app and saw his points where he had 11.8, which feels good for him after a bunch of single-digit weeks. But that's exactly the problem, Laquan, is that 11.8 fantasy points feels good for David Montgomery, and it only happened because he scored a touchdown this past week.
Yeah.
He was a once consistent RB2 that you felt great throwing into lineups. He is not that anymore. Over the last six games prior to Thanksgiving, he was averaging 6.8 fantasy points per game in half PPR. He had scored in the last 6 weeks, 7.1, 4.9, 10 with a touchdown, 9.6, 4.2, 5.2. And then yesterday he scored 11.8 with a touchdown. So basically, if you get a touchdown, you're barely cracking double digits. And if you don't get a touchdown, you're well under double digits, in the middle of single digits. He has not topped more than 40 rushing yards since week 5. And that game was against the Bengals. So damn, he knew he was going to do it.
That doesn't count.
Yeah. No, it doesn't count. We throw that out the window. He hasn't done it since week 3. That's 40. That's not 100. 40, Laquan.
40 yards.
It's been bad.
Oh, my God. And I did not realize it was that bad.
He is simply not the, this was a Sonic and Knuckles duo these last couple of years, right? This is no longer the Sonic and Knuckles duo. This is the Sonic show with Knuckles hanging around and making a guest appearance every 5 episodes. If that's how it works.
Or that's usually how cartoons title. Used to be.
Yeah. Exactly. So you can roll him out there if you're desperate in a flex spot and hope for a touchdown. And you can definitely keep him on your roster because he's one of the best handcuff backs or attrition backs in fantasy, because if Gibbs did go down, Montgomery would be a high-end RB1 potentially. But week to week, I am not trusting him as an RB2. I'm certainly not trusting him anything close to an RB1. And realistically, I'm trying to avoid starting him more often than not, unless my flex position is a disaster.
I would say this, though. Like, even this summer, if I remember correctly, his ADP was rather fair. And I feel like we felt as though, like, hey, this would be an awesome RB3, or even in some cases where folks waited RB2. I fear at this point of the season that there's no waiver wire pickups that you can really rely on right now. Like, the Bam Knights are gone. I mean, look, Trey Benson's on his way back. Kamani Vidal, we'll get into him later in the show. But it's like, I don't have any other options outside of David Montgomery if, you know, I'm sitting here starting him as a flex or as a RB2 for some of these leagues. So I ask you, Okada, is David Montgomery, like, rest of the season, like, kind of just like a bench player?
Yes, I think he should be. He must be on benches in the sense that he should not be on waivers, but he also very nearly must be on benches in the sense that he shouldn't be in starting lineups. So you should have him rostered because of what he could be with an injury to Gibbs or something like that. But I just don't think you can trust him with Gibbs taking over the backfield to the degree he has.
I'm going to play a little quick this or that game. And it's really quick because I have three running backs on my mind, right?
Yep.
David Montgomery or Aaron Jones.
This is to roster or start?
To start as a flex, just at any point as options. I'm looking at RB3s right now.
In half PPR?
Sure.
I'll go Aaron Jones by a hair.
Aaron Jones it's by a hair. PPR. So David Montgomery, Zach Charbonnet.
Ugh. Jeez. Wow. Honestly, I think that's a great question. That is the perfect way to look at it. And while it gives me significant pause for a moment because of the names, I'm going to say Zach Charbonnet, Laquan. And I think that that answer is important to our listeners. The reason being, they're getting basically the same amount of carries and yards. In fact, Charbonnet might even be getting more carries on average most weeks. And Charbonnet has the better chance at the touchdown than David Montgomery does because he's doing it all the time and getting all that goal line work. So I'm going to go Charbonnet. They were just sad.
Now, here's the third running back that I have on that tier because I'm glad you caught that with Zach Charbonnet in terms of usage. The same, like, we could paint that same picture in usage of, like, all right, I got to throw in Zach Charbonnet this week because X, Y, and Z. Now, Sean Tucker. Now, this is a dynamic that may change this week, and I feel like we'll iron out a little bit more in the show, but Sean Tucker straight up or David Montgomery?
I think, I think I have to go Montgomery.
I love when I stump you. I love it.
I have to go Montgomery because as far as I've ever seen, Sean Tucker is only good once a year when Bucky Irving is out. So with Bucky coming back, I don't trust that he's going to be consistently good. I will say his schedule down the stretch looks much better, but I don't think that matters if he's not getting usage. Montgomery's schedule gets very bad after this next week. Well, I'm still going here.
So we have an idea and range of like how we look at David Montgomery rest of the season. I think, you know, listeners and fantasy managers out there are probably kind of panicking at this point, but not to the point where like they're screaming, oh my God, because again, he found the end zone yesterday. You know, like as long as they keep putting him in scoring opportunities, we could look at him as a Zach Charbonnet, as an Aaron Jones or et cetera. Right. I think, you know, at the end of the day, man, it's one of those things that I go back to what I was saying all summer, Okada. Load up on those wide receivers and don't take risk at running back because that is clearly what we're sitting with right now. Let's get into some player topics, though, for week 13. Now, Amari and Hampton's expected back from injury. What are your expectations? And a second question here is loaded with what does Kamani Vidal value looks like with Amari and Hampton healthy back?
Well, the second part is easier than the first part, and that is nothing more than a handcuff. I don't think Kamani Vidal is getting frequent usage to the point where he's considerable as a fantasy play once Hampton is back. As for what we can expect from Hampton, when assuming he's healthy, which he should be, I think you can just look at basically his last like three games. He had a slow start to the year for the first couple, but then when he really got control of the backfield after Najee Harris's injury, you know, 19 carries, 12 carries, 12 carries, 70 yards, 128 yards, 44 yards, plus six catches for 26 yards.
That's where it's at.
He had, and that was his least productive receiving game, that third game.
He had, I think he ran like 30 routes in that game. Like he ran 30-something routes in that game.
He's like near CMC levels of usage. I mean, that's maybe a bit of an exaggeration because CMC is at a level that's never been seen before, but you get my point.
But no, I hear you. I get it. Yes.
Yeah. Hampton is that kind of back where he's going to get all the work that matters. So as soon as he's back, I'm rolling him immediately into lineups as a high-end RB2, maybe a low-end RB1. There's very few fantasy leagues I can think of where you wouldn't be starting him out the gate.
Nice. All right, that's good to hear. I think some folks are a little worried about him coming back from injury. Do I star him? Do I not? Yes, you star him. The boy showed us our RB1 ceiling already as a rookie. Like, we've seen this guy go out of the backfield and catch passes, like, similar to what you were saying in the picture you're painting about CMC. I mean, that dude's running routes. I honestly think that, you know, looking at his last two college years of production, my boy had more carries and more touches than Derrick Henry had in his last 2 years of college. So workhorse is on the table for him. So I think Kamani Vidal, he definitely becomes a bench player, a guy that's just sitting there as, you know, a handcuff. All right, Okada, let me ask you about Devin Neal. What are your expectations this week going against Miami? I know the matchup looks favorable, but I know you may have some thoughts about Devin Neal.
I do have some thoughts. Apparently, I have the most negative thoughts in the fantasy industry or something like along those lines because I write a waiver wire article every week. I submit it on Sunday night. It publishes on Monday. And come Monday afternoon, Tuesday, I'm looking at all the other waiver people in the industry, and everybody's got Devin Neal at the top of their list, 20% of your fab. Go get this guy and start him. And I had him as like outside my top 10 overall priorities, throw in 3-4% of your fab on him. And so apparently I hate Devin Neal. Now, why do I hate Devin Neal? Well, I think there's good reasons, so I'll tell you. But just be aware, apparently everybody else in the industry likes him more than me. So this is the pessimistic take. Yes, he saw 74% of the snaps last week when he played. However, he saw those snaps because Alvin Kamara got hurt in the middle of the game, had to come out, and there was no other running back for the Saints. Those are the only two guys who saw running back snaps. Now, there is another guy on the Saints who plays running back sometimes. His name is Taysom Hill. Heading into this next week, the Saints are going to put together more packages and plans for Taysom Hill, I would assume, with no Kamara, and they're going to activate at least one other running back, probably going to be Audric Estime. So yeah. I don't think Devin Neal is going to see 74% of the snaps. I don't even know that he's going to see 60% of the snaps. We're talking about a sixth-round running back who'd had 10 carries the entire year entering this last week. So I think everybody thinks he's, you know, going to just take over and run away with an RB1 job. I don't believe that that's true, but let's assume that it's true that he is even like significantly involved and sees some hefty volume. He saw that hefty volume last week, and he still only had 61 yards, no touchdown, because this offense, as you may know, Laquan, it stinks. It's yes. real bad. It is not good. No running back all year has scored more than 13 fantasy points in a game for the New Orleans Saints. So I don't think Mr. Sixth Round Not Involved is going to come in and do that all of a sudden with Taysom Hill involved, with Audric Estime getting touches. And then to your point about the Dolphins, I think everybody's going to look into their fantasy app and see this green number next to the Dolphins and think, ooh, yep. maybe I can play Devin Neal. Here's the thing. They had been very bad, but they have been much better since week 8, which is a decent sample size now. Over that span, since week 8, they held Bijan Robinson, Derrick Henry, James Cook, and Chris Rodriguez, not the biggest name, but he was the starter, and those first three names are huge, to a combined 8.5 fantasy points per game on 16.5 touches per game. So he might see 16.5 touches, maybe. I think that's optimistic. But even if he does, I think he might score 8.5 fantasy points or fewer because he's much worse than most of the names I just listed. I'm out on Devin Neal. I'm not looking to start him at all.
I think when folks see an available player, regardless of the position, like when one guy goes down, I think there's an immediate reaction from the entire fantasy community to say, spend X amount of fab. This is a top priority guy without actually looking at the offense that he is coming from. It's not like we're seeing Devin Neal take over this backfield and it's giving us anything on the ground over 4 yards per carry, by the way, because Alvin Kamara also under 4 yards per carry. The only running back that I agreed to drop fab on at that 20% was Kendre Miller, and he is no longer there. Season-ending injury. So therefore, if it ain't Kendre Miller, I don't want any parts of this Saints backfield. And unfortunately, for the future for Kendre Miller, it's kind of foggy right now. So I don't think there's a running back that I'm interested in, especially right now with the fantasy playoffs around the corner, that I want to strap myself to with an offense that is the New Orleans Saints. Real nasty work. Now I got to ask you about another running back. He's been ruled out already this week before recording. Trey Benson will not be playing this week. But when he does return, when he is fully healthy, what is the trust meter for you, Okada? Like, are we trusting him in the fantasy playoffs? Are you starting him?
Well, here's the problem is that if not coming back this week means that if he comes back next week, it is against the Los Angeles Rams.
Yes.
Who are murderous against running backs, as you well know. They have been terrifying to play fantasy RBs against. I don't think I'm going to feel great about rolling Trey Benson off a 2 or 3 month at that point absence against what has been one of, if not the best or toughest matchups for running backs all year. I think he'll be like a flex play against the Rams, maybe, which is as bad as he'll be for the rest of the year. After that, I get much more excited because then he has the Texans, who were also decently tough, but not as tough. And then the Falcons and the Bengals in fantasy championship.
We all love the Bengals in the championship, baby.
You can just, if you want to just hold on to Trey Benson all the way until the fantasy championship and play him that week, that's fine with me. But I think after the Rams, he will be startable as an RB2 because I do like him and I like this offense, especially with Jacoby Brissett running it, more than like we just talked about Devin Neal and the Saints. So I'll be rolling Benson out with some confidence once he's back, minus the Rams game where I'm going to feel much worse because of the matchup.
Now, you hit two sides of the spectrum there, like coincidentally, when you say like you'll start him and hold him until the fantasy playoffs. I agree, because if you had a replacement when he went down, because let's remember, Trey Benson was the guy we all spent the fab on and dropped many, many bags on him to get him off the waiver wire. But to be honest, like we did that because we lost James Conner. But then when he went down, we had to go to the bag of the Bam Knights, the Michael Carters and Kamani Vidal's, like whoever else was popping up off the waiver wire in that running back realm as flex territory. If I've made it this far without him, there is no absolute need, folks, to be throwing him in the starting lineup at any point until week 17. Because I do feel like now, when we look back, the arrow is pointing up for Trey Benson. The touches, the carries, he looked good. But his fantasy high was 10 fantasy points. Like, I don't see where these folks are starting to pull out of the bag in the fantasy streets that this is an RB1 returning. This ain't a Marion Hampton, folks. That ain't it. There's been some times where Trey Benson has struggled in that same backfield, struggled as a backup last year. So I think that the arrow is still pointing up for him, but I am not like, oh, let's go. Trey Benson's back in my starting lineup. No, we need to stay the course. Stay copacetic. Don't get too cute and just let it play out, because I'm not ready to start him this week. Not ready to start him next week. And damn sure ain't starting him against my Rams and not starting him the first round of the fantasy playoffs in week 15. So, moving on to another running back that's coming back from injuries. There's a lot of running backs that are coming back outside. Bucky Irvin is set to return. He practiced in full on Wednesday. Okada, your thoughts?
I'm rolling him out immediately, and I'm doing it with excitement. And that's as somebody who didn't really love Bucky Irvin all that much coming into the year. But what we saw from him for the first month of the season before he got hurt is legit, true RB1. All kinds of upside. This offense needs him to come back, and they need to be able to rely on him for both rushing and receiving work. You know, we all think of Rashad White as the pass catcher there, but in his first four games before he got hurt, four catches on four targets and scored a touchdown, 6 for 6 for 50 yards, 4 for 4 for 33 yards, 5 for 5 for 102 yards and a touchdown.
Hey, yo.
This man was catching balls all over the place.
Rashad White, who?
Yeah, exactly. Bucky Irving's rolling right back into RB1 status for me as soon as he's healthy. I think they've been taking it reasonably slow to make sure he is good to go before he goes. So if he goes, I think you're absolutely starting him. I can't think of a league where you wouldn't.
Roll him out. I have high expectations for him, but I will say I'm a little hesitant to understanding the actual workload. That's where I'm at with it. Like, I don't want to see workhorse Bucky Irvin because he was battling multiple injuries all season long. So why roll him out that way? I want them to go back to last season when they were ramping him up and he was being used like for 40% of the game and still putting up RB1 numbers. He could be used efficiently. We don't need this guy touching the ball more than 20-25 times a game. He can get it done in 10 to 15. So hopefully we keep it that way and we sprinkle in my boy Sean Tucker just a little bit, just a little bit. Okay. All right. Okay. We got to get to Scary Terry because he has not been scary whatsoever. I am not looking forward to his return. I look at him on my rosters where I'm either down and out or like I'm just in the middle. And Terry coming back, it doesn't feel like I'm getting that savior back, but what are your expectations for the rest of the season? You got Denver this week, but rest of the season, fantasy playoffs are here, Okada. What are we doing with Terry McLaurin?
Well, for this week, you're not starting him for any reason. Any reason. I don't care if you've got John Metchie as your other option. Play John Metchie.
Oh, John Metchie getting some love.
Terry McLaurin was not good when he was healthy, which has been almost no time this year because he's been hurt almost the entire year off and on, including from training camp. But when he played, he played four games. He saw more than four targets just once. That was in week two. And he caught five passes for 48 yards in that game. So that was his best game in terms of target inclusion. He saw nine that week, and it still wasn't very good. And then he happened to score a touchdown in week eight against the Chiefs, which was his only game since September. And that was his only game with double-digit fantasy points. On the whole, he has been bad. I'm talking bad, bad, unplayable, regardless of health. So, and regardless of matchup against Pat Surtain and Riley Moss and the Broncos. Yeah. So I'm not playing. I would play myself over Terry McLaurin this week. Screw it. Just for the amusement. I might get three fantasy points fewer if I play.
Are you on the waiver wire? I'll pick you up.
It would be funny. I'll look. I'll get myself added, at least on NFL fantasy. I mean, Denver has erased the best receivers in the league this year. With Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, A.J. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, George Pickens, Nico Collins, Rashee Rice. All those guys scored fewer than 12 fantasy points in their games against Denver. And those are some of the best names, if not like the four or five best names in the league. Terry McLaurin is not that by a long shot, even when healthy. I don't trust that he's healthy. So there's no way I play him this week. And I'm not excited to play him any other week. We'll see if the target situation changes. And we'll see if Jaden Daniels returns, because that's not even a guarantee. Yeah. But I'm not playing Terry McLaurin until I see a couple weeks straight of significant volume and accurate passing and fantasy production. Otherwise, you can keep him on your bench for that hope, but I'm not excited about it, and I think you could cut him for a number of guys.
Oh, that's a serious option, because at the wide receiver position, I've been more friendly of cutting guys loose and just picking up guys that are giving us valuable targets and giving us fantasy points on a week-to-week basis. So your name... To me, I've been like this since I started playing fantasy football. Your name means nothing to me if you're not bringing me fantasy points. You will hit the bench, collect dust, and or hit the waiver wire. I really don't care. You're talking to a guy this year that sat Jamar Chase for Elijah Manor. Jamar Chase only put up literally 0.1 more points than Elijah Manor that week because how much Jake Browning was toxic to his fantasy production. I am not scared to sit the big names. We just talked about Justin Jefferson at the top of the show. That boy's hitting the bench hard this week.
Yep.
Hard. There's no reason for me to start him. But we need to transition into the league losers, because there's been some names that have been popping off in the fantasy streets. Some names that have been popping up in the FTN Fantasy TikTok's DM. League losers. This crock pot is full with Lamar Jackson, Sam Darnold, Roma Dunze, Marvin Harrison Jr., Woody Marks, DeAndre Swift. Now, this is just a handful of guys that I just grabbed, that I personally roster, that some of the fantasy streets are rostering, that are popping up in the DMs. Okada, pick your choice. Where do you want to iron out some of these league losers, and or do you agree or disagree with some of the names you see?
Oh, boy. There are definitely some names here that I am terrified are going to lose me leagues. And I think the most obvious, both from the fact that he's going to be the type to lose you the league because you can't start him, and and because of how bad he's been, is Lamar Jackson. Oh, Laquan. Laquan. I don't know. I unironically on my drive home last night after watching the Ravens lose to the Bengals in horrendous fashion on Thanksgiving night, I had this like little daydream as I was driving home of being a press reporter in the post game and asking John Harbaugh, bruh, what is wrong with your quarterback? And seeing what his answer was, because there is something wrong with him. It cannot be denied. And if in this mindset that I was playing out, I was imagining Harbaugh being like, oh, no, he's fine. We're not going to talk about any problems with our quarterback. We'll get better and execute. Nah, something is wrong. Lamar Jackson, since he came back from injury, he had the one game where he threw four touchdowns, miraculously. He still only threw for 204 yards, but he threw four touchdowns against the Dolphins. He still didn't run the ball, and he has not run the ball at all since he got back from injury. 14 yards, 36 yards, 10 yards, 11 yards, 27 yards. Those are his five games since coming back from injury. That is not Lamar Jackson levels of rushing. And that's just the rushing. He's also looked And when I say this word, Laquan, I mean it. Bad as a passer. I mean, I don't know what's wrong. If you watched the game last night, he was missing throws constantly. Felt like every time he threw the ball at Zay Flowers, it was going 10 feet over his head. So yeah. I don't know what it is because we haven't heard anything. Maybe he's still hurt. Maybe the injury has, you know, given him a lack of confidence or hampered his ability to be a threat on the ground, and then that messes up his threat through the air. But it is really, really dangerous and concerning. And we're talking three straight games, 6, 7, and 7 fantasy points.
Yikes.
Huh?
This is Lamar Jackson, folks. Like Lamar Jackson, Action Jackson. Like, Okada, you're not lying. Like, anybody that is watching Lamar play football right now, this is completely night and day of the quarterback we've seen even to start the beginning of this season, right? Like, the last four games, Okada, he has less fantasy points than Cam Ward, and he's only played 2 games. This is pitiful. This is bad. This is scorched the earth. You are on the bench until further notice. Like, I don't know if there's Lamar Jackson teams out there that are even sniffing the fantasy playoffs. If you are, you picked up a Jacoby Brissett. You picked up maybe a Joe Flacco in his reigns of Cincinnati at that point. I think right now, a lot of Lamar Jackson rosters need to be panicking. They need to be panicking and trying to figure out, hey, my trade deadline is gone. This is my roster. I'm in the middle. What can I do? Can I pick up a Trevor Mid-Lawrence? I would tell them yes. I would tell them yes, because Trevor Mid-Lawrence has been running. And when Trevor Mid-Lawrence can't find the end zone with his arm, he will find it with his feet. That is a fact. My boy has 8 touchdowns in his last 3 games. Trevor Mid-Lawrence, yes, pick him up. That is your plan, emergency B, with Lamar Jackson. Now, Okada, I want to ask you about Woody Marks. This has been one of the more annoying cases as a running back, where Woody Marks will have the setup, layup matchup on the ground. We've seen it against the Ravens. We've seen it now against the Bills. But he does not deliver the fantasy points. How do we treat him in the fantasy playoffs? Because some folks are looking at him as their savior, as a guy that you can rely on, because he's motioning and posturing to be the RB1 for Houston. What are we doing?
Well, the problem, the real concern here, or the worry, is that he's not even just posturing anymore. He is the RB1 in Houston, and I don't know that there's any debate anymore. But it's not Joe mattering.
Mixon. You check Joe Mixon's Twitter. He thinks he's coming back. Just saying.
That was the weirdest story of the year. Yeah.
What?
Woody Marks has clearly surpassed Nick Chubb. He is the starting running back for the Texans. Problem is, that hasn't mattered at all. Like, last 4 weeks, he's scored fewer than 8 half PPR fantasy points 3 out of 4 weeks. And that's despite having 10 carries, 3 targets, 14 carries, 3 targets, 18 carries, 1 target, 16 carries, 1 target. Like, he is getting the work and he is the starter, but it's not mattering in an offense that is either struggling in a given week or it's throwing the ball with Davis Mills a gazillion and a half times and Woody Marks isn't having the chance to run the ball or be effective enough when running the ball to be good for fantasy.
That's been the biggest issue right there.
Exactly. I think I'm still playing him over someone like David Montgomery that we talked about earlier, or over Sean Tucker, because I'd rather know I'm getting 15 touches and hoping that the efficiency improves than knowing I'm getting 6 touches and hoping I get a touchdown off of that, because I think that's less likely. So he's an RB3, not an RB2 right now, but he's a playable RB3 in my opinion.
I can agree with that. I can agree with that because you hit the nail on the head. It's like, at least you know 10 to 15 touches are on the table. With these other guys, that's not probably on the table that week unless an injury, unless it's game script. They're trying to milk the clock, whatever. But a guy like DeAndre Swift now, with a guy like Kyle Manungai behind him, who's been finding the end zone, finding fantasy relevance, where Swift has been on the decline, like, do we still trust Swift as this RB1 who has the touches on the table, but not delivering fantasy points?
We don't trust him as an RB1. This was one of the things in my FTN Things to Know article this week, and I did not include it at the top because I knew we were going to get to it here. But number six in the list on the article one is Kyle Manungai is a legitimate problem for DeAndre Swift managers.
Wow.
And this is tough for me, and I think for you to say, because yes, we were major Swifties coming into this year.
The top 12.
Not the Taylor kind, the DeAndre kind. Yeah, and he's been that. Like, to our justification, he has been that.
Been that, yeah.
This year, he's been a top 12 running back. And I'm not positive that he won't be for the rest of the season, but I am worried that he won't be, because Kyle Manungai is stealing all of the inside the 10 touchdown opportunities.
Yeah.
Last week, we had this situation where Manungai saw more carries and more touches than DeAndre Swift, and so that really, really hurt, and Swift was terrible. I don't foresee that being the case commonly, because I think Ben Johnson likes what he's been getting out of DeAndre Swift, likes his explosiveness. So I think we'll still get DeAndre Swift as the lead back in terms of touches and opportunities and snaps. But you need those touchdowns to be an RB1, Laquan, and he's not getting the chance. Manungai is taking all of those chances. We're back to what DeAndre Swift was with, like, Jamal Williams in the old Lions Ben Johnson days, where Jamal Williams was scoring 19 touchdowns.
PTSD is starting to hit. Yeah,
exactly. So now DeAndre is more involved as a rusher than he was back then. He was kind of just a pass-catching back for Detroit in that previous Ben Johnson era. But it is the same sort of situation where when they get into the red zone, when they get inside the 10, it was all Jamal Williams. Now it's all Kyle Manungai, and it caps Swift's ceiling. I'm still starting Swift more often than not, though he's not a must start anymore. I think he's like a mid to low end RB2 now instead of a fringe RB1, top 10, like you said. But I don't feel confident, and there are leagues where you might have another couple running backs that you can play over him.
Last one. I'm going to package both of these up because it's kind of a WTF is going on. Adunze, Marvin Harrison Jr. Now, both of these guys, I would say we painted as low-end wide receiver ones in terms of high-end wide receiver twos in the lights of like a T. Higgins range on a week-to-week basis, what we can get from these folks. But Roma Adunze has been terrible these last couple of weeks. The last time we've seen Marvin Harrison Jr., he wasn't delivering even with this elevated offense with Jacoby Brissett. Now, the fantasy playoffs are here. These guys are wide receiver twos at best for a lot of these teams, right? Trust meter on these guys. Like, what are we doing?
I'm going to trust Marvin Harrison Jr., and I'm going to trust him more than Roma Adunze. Now, this is going to sound a little crazy, but I think that's where I'm at, and I'll tell you why. After that bye week in week 8, they played the Cowboys and the Seahawks. The Cardinals did. In the Cowboys game, which obviously is the best matchup in fantasy, he caught 7 of 10 targets for 96 yards and a touchdown. It was his best game of the year. High. It was very encouraging. And we were like, ooh, Jacoby Brissett, what is he doing? We like this. Then the next week against Seattle, he had 12 targets, but only caught 3 for 33, still managed to score a touchdown, but 3 for 33 was really, really rough. He also caught a 2-point conversion in that game, by the way, so he ended up with 12.8 fantasy points, which is pretty nice. The Seahawks have much better corners than the Cowboys. They have much better corners than a lot of teams in this league. I think that was the main reason that Marvin Harrison struggled despite seeing 12 targets. But seeing double-digit targets in both those games per set after the bye gives me confidence to roll him out again when he is healthy. And I know a lot of people will say, but look at the Michael Wilson breakout. Yeah, are we looking at the Michael Wilson breakout? Because my guy has been on this team for 2-3 years now with Marvin Harrison Jr. and was never doing that. So I think that what we're seeing is Jacoby Brissett finds his wide receiver one, and he targets the living daylights out of them, and they are good for fantasy. I think when Marvin Harrison Jr. is back, he will go back to being that role, that guy for Jacoby Brissett, and Michael Wilson will disappear to the degree that he has before, or to some degree at least. So I'm rolling Marvin Harrison out once he's healthy. Roma Adunze, I'm much less confident in, and it's because I believe he might be more talented than Marvin Harrison Jr. I believe that his quarterback might be better, although Jacoby Brissett's fantasy production is great.
Amazing.
And I believe the offense is I believe the offense is better in Chicago. But the problem is they are like Green Bay neighbors, if they actually are, in the sense that you don't know who's going to be the guy week to week.
Yeah.
Like, we know in weeks that we believe Jordan Love's going to be good, which is pretty easy to predict because it's when he's against soft matchups.
Yes.
We know someone's going to be good for Green Bay, but we never know who. Like, if anyone had told you this past week on Thanksgiving to start Dontavian Wicks, would you have done that?
Liar. No. Yeah. Like, no. Come on.
But Dontavian Wicks was the guy. And you can never know with Green Bay. I think we're at that point with Chicago where you just can't know. Is it going to be a DJ Moore week? Is it going to be a Colson Loveland week? Is it going to be a ground game week? Is it going to be one of those Adunze weeks? Is it going to be a Luther Burden week? He's starting to break out.
So
Adunze will have some games down the stretch where he will be good. I guarantee it. He will have some games where he's a wide receiver two or even wide receiver one. But I don't know when they're coming. I don't know how they can be predicted. And I don't think you can trust him to do it frequently enough to feel confident. So I think he's like, I think he's more of a flex play that you're hoping for the upside from. Whereas when Marvin Harrison's back, I think you're putting him in your lineup as a wide receiver two and feeling okay about it.
That's a great analysis. Great take. Because looking at Adunze, the last three games, 44% catch rate. He's not catching it. He has a ton of drops in these last couple of games. I know his dad is on Twitter probably barking out, you know, the fantasy streets, but at the end of the day, come on now, he's getting these targets. You have a 26% target share in the last three games. That's high. That's elite. That's in the level of, like, you're getting wide receiver one looks. You're his first read, but you're dropping these passes. So I think flex range expectations should be the move, you know, moving forward. Get your brain unwrapped of him being this wide receiver one that you drafted, you know, in the sixth, seventh round. Great value, but now we're at that point now where these fantasy points matter. Today, right now. So I do think that you need to make some roster shifting and not put him as a wide receiver two in your head and having those expectations, but start putting him up against guys that you are questioning to put in your flex on a week to week, like a Stephon Diggs. Like, I like Stephon Diggs. I like Chris Olave. I like these guys' names better compared to Rome Adunze, what we've seen these last couple of weeks, folks. But yeah. League losers, Okada, it's been an amazing pod. We've gotten our beefs with Turkey to the side. I didn't mean to do that pun. But I'm saying is you got to have some fried turkey, bro, and it needs to be juicy. You need to have some turkey at the Friendsgiving that is juicy. We don't do no dry-ass turkey, bro. That's how you choke and die. Like, if I have a dry turkey in front of me, it is going in the trash. But, folks, of course, make sure you guys are following me at Real Deal Fantasy and my boy Okada, Matt Okada, on all social media platforms. And please make sure you check out the FTNFantasy.com website. We have a great sale going on. There's a 10% promo code right here at the bottom going down, FTN Show, to help you out with an FTN subscription. So please make sure you guys are liking, subscribing, and come back next week. Got another great episode for week 14. The fantasy playoffs are approaching. Okada, of course, as usual. Final thoughts.
Turkey's trash. Eat ham.
Yo.
Lamar Jackson is also trash. Lamar Jackson is the turkey of fantasy right now.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Adios.
Have a good one.